comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters, and so do you. Don't forget the K-Files if you haven't subscribed. Be sure you do. It's absolutely free. It's our newsletter. It comes out each and every week. We email it to you, and there are no strings attached. All you have to do is just go to my website, click on the link that says K-Files, and subscribe. It's really that simple. I want to thank all of those of you who are part of the Kevi Knights. You are doing a fabulous job in spreading the word each and every day about the Kevin Smith Show. And it continues to bear fruit, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And for those who are not yet Kevi Knights, if you'd like to be a Kevi Knight, all you have to do is send me an email that says, I want to be in the Kevi Knights. It doesn't cost anything. We'll send you a little ebook that's got the information in it about what we do and how we do it and so forth. Let me say this. Now, some of you have websites. Do you have a link to the Kevin Smith Show on your website? We certainly would appreciate it. If you do not have a link to the Kevin Smith Show, please consider putting one on your website, on your webpage. We would tremendously appreciate it. You know, one of the things that helps is that there are people that know about you, and they know about your website, but they never heard of the Kevin Smith Show. And so putting our link on your website will tremendously help the show. And, you know, we've been doing it this way since the beginning, since the very beginning. If there ever was a show that was built from the ground up by those who listen, it's this one. So if you got a website, put a link on there, okay? I would appreciate it very much. And also, if you are not yet a member, consider becoming a member. You know, it's 23 cents a day, and for 23 cents a day, you get a lot of value. One of the things that you get for 23 cents a day is you get to watch the show live every night. Plus, you can watch the latest show. $6.95 a month, that's 23 cents a day. So if you're not a member, consider doing that. My guest tonight is Sam Maranto, and we're looking forward to having him back with us. He's been with us before. Sam Maranto is the state director for MUFON in Illinois, and he's a very popular conference speaker. Each time he's with us, he brings interesting information about UFOs in his part of the world, and he's the guy that really knows. He's the guy that should know, being the state director in Illinois. So we'll be back right after this, and we'll be back with Sam Maranto. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Sam Maranto. He's been my guest before, and as a matter of fact, a couple of times before, I think. And but he always has interesting information to share with us, and you would expect him to, since he is the Illinois State Director for MUFON. Sam, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks for having me back, and yes, it has been an interesting few months since we have spoken.
So there have been a few things happening in your part of the world?
Yes, and the funny thing is, I think much has to do with correlations with other sightings. Say, for instance, possible flaps starting all the way back in July, the 4th of July flaps of orange orbs being seen throughout the Midwest all the way to the East Coast. And, of course, John Ventry did a tremendous amount of research on that in his area. We had numerous reports out here.
And now, you know, let me just break in with a little bit of information. Last year, early last year, we had reports from people listening to this show in Australia of the orange orbs. And then just, I think it was last week, we had a caller from Australia who told us about his backyard just kind of being invaded by orange orbs. And one of them turned, and I've never heard this before, but one of them turned into the shape of those hieroglyphs that you see in Egypt of the Eye of Horus. And
very interesting.
Turned into that shape. And but this, the report that we heard was last week, but it actually happened a few years ago. So this orange orb thing is kind of worldwide.
Yes, it is. And this is where the cynics, they're not skeptics, I call them cynics, they refer these things as automatically being Chinese lanterns, flares, etc. And you and I both know, and many of the listeners, we have an idea what these things look like. Most of us have seen them. If not, you've seen them on YouTube. These things are self-luminescent. They have borders. They're really something to see. I personally seen one in, I believe it was May the 2nd of 2003. Julie and I were driving down LaGrange Road, and she pointed it out. And this object was huge, and it was just sitting there as still as could be in the sky. And I believe we had a 23-mile-an-hour wind that night, and it just sat there. And it was beautiful. We followed it for about 7 minutes, and it just took off. And when it took off, the colors changed. The spectrum of the color completely changed.
When you say it has borders, I've seen close-up photographs of these, but some folks may not have. Describe sort of what you're talking about.
Picture my object would have been approximately the size, I'm holding my hand and my thumb and index finger, I would say easily the size of a half a dollar, let's say a quarter to a half dollar. And the altitude of this would have been somewhere around 1,500 to 2,000 feet in the air.
So what you're saying is that at that distance, it had the apparent size of anywhere from a quarter to a half a dollar.
Yes.
Okay.
And the color was definitively orange. I mean, it wasn't bleeding over into a different spectrum of color. It was a solid, more towards the red, as far as distinct color. It was solid. Nothing like that is in the sky. Nothing that you've ever seen. And it just sat there perfectly still. I was trying to see if there was any corona, any differentiation near the edge. And there may have been something slight, but that could have been accounted for, obviously, by humidity, because it was relatively humid, even though it was a windy day. The object sat there in this wind perfectly still, and then it took off. And as it took off, it changed from this orange to a goldish color to a yellowish, and it went through an entire change of color. It didn't, and that could be accountable for a lot of things too. But I would think the motion itself, as it's moving along, it may be changing the frequency, the wavelength.
You know, the guy that I mentioned that saw one that changed its shape into the eye of Horus.
Yeah.
He said that as they moved away, they turned the color. I think he described it as highly polished copper.
Yes. Like a goldish, a gold to a burnt orange type color. And I've seen them, in fact, that same year in September, September 23rd. I don't think actually what I saw were the orbs. I believe what I saw was three points of a triangular craft followed by a neon blue smaller light. And that was actually downtown Chicago. There were multiple witnesses to seeing this object at intermittent times prior to this and afterwards. One artist drew, he's seen it with some friends, and he drew what he's seen, and he was at the fountain downtown and seen it, I think he's seen it on two nights. So this vicinity, we get a tremendous amount of UFO activity. Now, again, are these reversed engineered craft, advanced craft, or, you know, the honest-to-goodness real McCoy UFO, something that is, let's say, an extraterrestrial or interdimensional craft?
Mm-hmm.
I would say we get all of them.
Now, you mentioned seeing these in a triangular formation.
Yes.
With a sort of a neon blue light following them. Now,
yes.
I've looked at lots and lots and lots of UFO videos, as you have. I've looked at tons of UFO videos that show these triangular formations, and it is very common that there is that other light, not part of the triangle, often not directly behind the triangle, but off to one side and behind.
Yes.
What's the deal with that? I mean, that's just very common.
It is common. Also, let's say, for instance, the Tinley Park case of 2004, 2005, the mass sightings here. We had photographs, video images, and what I find interesting is many people accounting for other colorations in the skin or the underlying surface of this object, which we feel to be one very extremely large object. Now, we also have footage of objects coming in and out of it, and this footage just needs more analysis. You know, people say it's been 2004, Sam, when are you going to get done with the case? I'll be done with the case when I'm certain of what we have to present. The thing is, I don't want to be premature. Plus, there's more footage out there that I want to get my hands on. So there are objects that detach, come out. The other thing that may possibly happen is it may just very well be just some emission of, you know, emitted energy in a certain area. It may be an ambient field, I don't know, that we're picking up optically, but I know digital cameras are picking it up also.
What do you think the deal is with that fourth light, though?
It seemed to have been trailing it as if it was trying to catch up to it. And in photographs, I don't know how many times I see nearly the same coloration of blue. And it could be really close. That's the real startling part. Kevin, I'm thinking one picture in particular where a woman was shooting a picture shooting a picture of the triangle, and it was easily, oh, a mile and a half away. And here in this picture, there is a distinct blue coloration near her, and maybe no more than 30 feet away. And then there were other pictures in the same effect. Now, I don't know what's going on, but that has happened time and time again.
Well, let's go back to what we originally started talking about, the orbs. Does this seem to be the orb activity? Does this seem to be increasing in frequency and or in number, either one?
The orange orb, I personally feel, is associated with the very large V-shaped and triangular craft, isosceles. Again, not to be confused with the 300-footers or smaller triangles, which can be some advanced engineering, you know, on our end, or human end, I don't know. But these massive craft, these huge isosceles, you know, that are pushing a mile long to, you know, half a mile long, these massive objects, the orbs seem to be associated with them. I say this because on August 21st, 2004, we had the large objects show up, the large isosceles. Now, on Halloween, we had a multitude of objects beside the large triangular craft, and the other objects in particular were the large orbs. One gentleman had one over his house, and he says it was as big as his house, and he described it in detail, and it seemed to be moving inside, whirling, the colors were changing inside as it gets closer, almost like opalescence. And you're seeing the motion of a lava lamp, but put that in, you know, much quicker, where it's changing inside. Mm-hmm. And he used the term lava and a few other things as descriptive terms. But it's massive. It startled him and his wife. And the other thing was, when it got so close, they tried to take pictures, and the camera, of course, didn't work. And that's commonplace. We had problems with the Nextel phones, with the FM transmitter, you know, the radio.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't work. There were even some telephone problems when they became real close. Some areas had problems with their telephones. So this is commonplace.
Well, I'll tell you something. One of our listeners lives south of Phoenix, out in the desert. He's got a ranch out south of Phoenix. And several years ago, I forget if it was 2006, 2007, somewhere along in there, they were having a ton of sightings over the desert out in the area that he lives in. Now, he lives a long ways from me. Although I'm in the Phoenix area, he's about 45 to 50 minutes from where I am. And he's out in the desert south of Phoenix. He got some really phenomenal video of these orbs and got good close-up zoomed-in shots of them. And you know what they look like? On the inside, it looks like a Tesla coil. You know, a Tesla, people that don't know what that is, you've seen the little toy Tesla coil novelty item where there's looks like lightning going on inside of a glass bulb.
Yes.
And you can put your finger on it and it'll attract the lightning to that direction, but it won't hurt you. You won't feel it. Well, inside of that, these orbs, it looks like that. It looks like you know, the inside of a Tesla bulb with a Tesla coil in it. And just phenomenal video. And then one of them, there are two of them up there, or three of them, I think. But one of them goes through this thing where it divides, and you have two halves with this string of light between the two halves, and then it comes back together. And then, as they begin to fly away, they take on the shape of those donut-shaped objects that you see in the video of the tether.
Yes, the NASA footage.
The NASA footage, and you know it's got that little notch in the back?
Yep.
They take on that shape and fly away. Now, my question is that a craft, or is that some sort of living entity?
You know, the living component, or the living the possibility of some of these things being living objects or composites of technology, you know, are something that really does make sense. To look at ourselves as being vessels of a consciousness, then what is the vessel? The vessel in itself is a technology, be it a biological, chemical, or, you know, nuts and bolts. It's technology. Whose, I don't know. Matter of evolution, I don't know. But it appears that some of these objects are living by all definition. The other thing is the dimensional concept, which is something that I never wanted to accept, but I could completely understand that that is something that can't be discounted or ignored. So we may be perceiving only a portion or a visible portion of what actually is going on there. The other thing is speed. Much of these objects are, many of these objects are doing things that we can't see because they're moving so fast. And if we had super high-speed film, we could possibly get an idea of what's actually going on. We may just...
All right, I hate to do it, Sam, but we have to step away for a break. The music has taken over. All right, folks, we'll be back. We'll pick up right there when we come back with Sam Maranto. I just noticed that my automation software is playing the same breaks from last night. I must have not clicked the right button. I guess you won't mind having country music one more night? I hope not. My guest tonight, Sam Maranto. And Sam, when we went away, we were you were about to say something about the speed of these things we were talking about in terms of, are they living or are they machinery? And then you mentioned something about speed and we had to go to break.
Well, what I was talking about or trying to convey is that these objects are more than likely moving at greater speeds than what we're able to perceive normally. In other words, there may be more going on right there, and the only thing you're picking up is the illumination, or in some instances, the fuzzy object, you know. Another thing is the illumination may be a distraction. You could be looking at one thing here, something else is going on in back you. It could be an attraction, it could be a way to have you focus, and possibly put you in a a very slight hypnotic trance, or even something more than that. So there's many different uses of the illumination, as it being, is it just an ambient result of energy from the propulsion? Is there more to it as far as purposeful? I don't know, but I can't discount it. And just thinking of cases. Up in Fredericks, Wisconsin, it appeared some of these things were alive. And one gentleman by the name of Carter, as you may have recalled, he wrote a book on sky creatures. And there's been a lot of research about these things that appear to me more like translucent yet illuminating, like squids, octopi, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they live in the air. So their composition is obviously different as far as matter goes, but yet they have those same qualities as say, for instance, a cuttlefish or a squid. So an octopus, too. So here you have, you know, these are things that have bioluminescence. Now, is that what some of these things are? You know, quite possibly.
One of the theories that I heard about, along the same lines as what you're talking about, in answer to a question about, well, if that's the case, where did they come from? I mean, why are we beginning to see them now? UFOs have been seen, but you know, for centuries. But why are we beginning to see these things now that appear to be alive? And I heard one theory about that is, well, now we're disturbing the air with tons and tons of radio frequencies, microwaves, and plus there's HAARP, and there are four or five other HAARP type installations in other countries. And so maybe, you know, with shooting all that stuff into the air around us, all that energy may have attracted them to lower atmosphere.
Sure. The very motion of microwaves, it seems as though it increases the humidity but not the precipitation, which is very, very strange. If you were to look at water in a microwave, you know, when you open it up, it's really charged. You have a lot of humidity, but you may not, because the particles are moving at such speeds that they may not condense into precipitation. They may not turn to a droplet until they're at a higher percentile than normal, making them a little bit slippier. But it may give a environment far more conducive to these things to live in.
Well, you know, that's easily observed, too, because you can put a pan of water on your stove.
Yeah.
And bring it to a boil, and you'll see steam coming up out of it. Put a
yeah.
cup of water into your microwave oven and bring it to a boil, and you will not see steam coming up out of that cup.
No, because you have the particles are moving at such high speeds that they're not, you know, they're not forming precipitation, but you still have a higher level of humidity. So to become precipitation, it has to be a higher level. And that's what's going on, is what it seems to be going on in the atmosphere. Another element to that, a negative element, is the unusual amount of various types of molds and fungi that are thriving and evolving in that environment that may very well be responsible to a lot of respiratory problems.
Are you talking about, when you say thriving in that environment, are you talking about in the atmosphere?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, I think we're seeing a different type of an artificial atmosphere, you know, like a petri dish, and we're seeing, you know, more molds and fungi attacks on plants that you haven't seen before. And I think some of that is accountable to that.
Okay, let's now this is highly, highly speculative, but let's take a hard turn here for just a moment and chase a rabbit. Based on what you just said about we're finding more molds and fungi that are living in the atmosphere and evolving and morphing and so forth and thriving in our atmosphere. Okay. I received an email, I think it was yesterday. It was a report, you know, an article that a journalist had done about Morgellons disease. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Morgellons, ladies and gentlemen, if you get it, you will have fibers that you'll get big sores on your skin, and out of those sores, fibers will grow. And in this article, it reported that DNA testing had been done and compared with DNA testing on samples from chemtrails, and they match. So DNA sampling from Morgellons and DNA sampling from chemtrails, and they match. Now, I don't know if, I assume this report is true. I have no reason to believe that it's not true, but I'm not saying that it is. I'm just taking it at face value. All right, now, this, with the increased amount of molds and fungi that are thriving in the atmosphere, and you take this report that matches Morgellons to chemtrails, and we're talking about these, all of this in reference to these possible living UFOs, unidentified flying objects of some kind, and possibly alive. Is it possible that what's being sprayed in the chemtrails is sort of maybe like pesticide for these living UFOs?
Like a nano technology, but yet living tendril. And, you know, that's not that far-fetched, you know, considering how we're dealing with weird to begin with. You know, when you're in this element, weird is here. So,
and right in the middle of it sits you and me.
Yeah. And so we're at the threshold of taking it that much further. But it makes sense when you're watching your environment change dramatically, and you hear accounts of chemtrail spraying and the correlation of UFO activity either increasing, decreasing, etc. We know there's a correlation with radar and chemtrails and HARP, etc. You know, there's enough documentation to show, you know, this isn't theory, this is fact, and something that's been played around with for a long time. Well, could it also be a biological pesticide if it's, you know, created, you know, creating some sort of nano tendril or something like that, that is evolving now, that's gotten out of hand? Who knows? Anything's possible.
Interestingly, today I received an email with a whole bunch of photographs attached and without any explanation. Now, these are like 7 or 8 photographs of chemtrails. And this is from one of America's truly major top scientists. And there was no comment, just all these chemtrail photographs. Makes you wonder.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing where people, even to today, haven't figured it out that that is just not right.
You mean the spraying? When you say it's not right, you mean the spraying of the chemtrails?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, all you have to do is look at. You have to understand how quick a contrail dissipates. Even in very cold conditions, not even the usual above 33,000 feet, these are not normal trails, contrails, by no means. In fact, the fun part is watching the ones with what apparently have a oil-based solvent in it drop, and I doubt if that's the plane's dropping fuel. And we've seen this time and time again. We've actually had these droplets fall on us in various types of sprays. And all I could say is you better wash it off quick and otherwise look forward to being sick for a while.
Well, you know, the technology itself could be used for very beneficial purposes.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
it could be. But it doesn't appear that that's the case at this point. It certainly doesn't. All right, let's go back now, because I took that hard turn off of what we were talking about and chased that rabbit. So let's get back on the trail. You started out by talking about a correlation between some of the sightings in your area and what's going on around the world. And we were talking about the orbs. Are there other types of correlations, other types of sightings that are somehow connected and correlated with what's
yes.
going on?
What I've really found interesting is correlations between old sightings and current sightings. And this I find interesting. One being imagine a pumpkin seed with the section of it, the back section, concave, like bit out. Looking like the Rhodes photo of that sighting. In fact, I know of at least three sightings and photographed that look very similar to what this witness photographed in the evening and describes.
All right. Before we get into that, we have to take a break, and I don't want to interrupt it. So we'll step away for the break, and then when we come back, we'll start back with the pumpkin seed UFO. And welcome back. We're talking with Sam Maranto this evening. And Sam, you were about to tell us about this pumpkin seed-shaped UFO correlation.
Yes. It's from what he's describing and from the picture that I did receive from him and have done some enhancements on, it has that same shape as the Rhodes photo and a few others from the 50s. So here is a correlation that this is something that has returned or just has been seen again. Now, you know, we're hearing more about triangles. And again, people keep saying, well, this has to be our technology because it seems as though the disks aren't here. Well, the funny thing is there were so many different varieties to begin with at any given time, but it seems as though I think people were looking more for saucer-shaped or disc-shaped objects that would qualify it as being a UFO or a flying saucer or whatever they would call it, and possibly just discount these other type of objects as being, wow, what was that, you know? Was it just my imagination? Or, oh, well, that can't be, you know.
Well, the original...
So in other words...
The original report that started the modern UFO era was by a pilot, and I can't think of his name right at the moment, 1947.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Kenneth Arnold.
Yeah, now what he actually described was not a saucer shape.
No.
But he said they were moving like if you skipped a saucer across the water. Yeah. And the press picked it up and called them flying saucers. But what he drew were boomerang shaped.
Yes. More in line with, excuse me, some of these other type of crafts that have these indentations or concave areas in the back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, at the with the tether experiment, you have that notch at the back, and so you have
yes.
there's an indentation there. But you know, it is saucer shaped until you get to that notch at the back. But, you know, if you watch that video very carefully, you will see the notch move. It'll fade out at the back and reform at the front on some of them.
The notch could very well be just an area that isn't being in a state, that isn't in a current state of flux. Because much like running a current of electricity through, you know, some tungsten and, you know, a filament, and you get the illumination, people are always thinking, you know, well, why does a UFO, I hear these cynical terms, well, why does a UFO need lights? You know, it doesn't make any sense. Well, it's illumination. It's in a state of flux. That area may not be in a state of flux.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another probability, you know, to consider. With some of these notched craft, I've even seen, in fact, have a photo of a notched triangular craft that seems to be, you know, how would you describe it? Coming off of a larger craft that has notches. And this large craft, in fact, the gentleman described this much larger craft, this huge object in the sky. He says it was like it was bitten around the edge by sharks. I says it had notches. And he says, yes, it had notches. And I was thinking, well, why on earth would it have notches, would it have these notches sticking out of it? And it would make all the sense if these were docking bays. And here he took a photo afterwards of a triangular craft that appears to be, you know, attaching or detaching from a docking bay, one of these notches. So the shape of this actual object, under the assumption that these observations and photographs are correct, it may take on a different shape altogether if all the components were attached to it. And some of those, and other sets of footage that he has, appears to be triangles with notches and regular triangles, carpenter-type squares, rectangular-type objects that he has that seem to be tumbling out of clouds, very illuminated clouds. So if, in fact, all these things are as they appear to be, we may be dealing with something along the lines of transformers, you know, these larger objects that break off facets and take off, you know, and obviously remain as a different shape.
I was trying to think, as you were describing that, I was thinking of this movie that just came out a few months ago, but I can't remember the name of it now. But that's kind of what the deal is. These aliens are in these transformer-type vehicles and machinery, you know, that they operate. But they're kind of transformer-like. Mm-hmm. And, what was the name of that? I can't think of the name of it. Somebody will think of it, and when we open the phones later, you can tell me, folks, what the name of that was. But it's it just came out in 2009. Well, Sam, next to the Phoenix Lights, probably the most publicized UFO event in recent times took place in your area, right above Chicago's O'Hare Airport. And the media reported it straight. At least the newspaper did. Reported it straight. And no ridicule, just gave the report. And I thought that was a tremendous, huge step forward for UFO investigation, is just to get the media to just give a straight report on it. You know, I'm not looking for the media to jump in and say, oh, this is an alien spacecraft. I'm not looking for that. But just give a straight report on, you know, it was seen, we don't know what it was, witnesses said this, and let it go. And your newspaper there in Chicago did that. And I thought that was tremendous. However, we haven't heard much since then. in terms of analysis of any photographs? Or, I mean, there have been a few statements, but nothing much. What's the status of that?
Well, when John Hilkovich, who was the author of that article, and he received that case from none other than our good friend Peter Davenport at the National UFO Center, when that all transpired that day, I was here in the process of the transition to becoming the state director, and had the current director, who is Dave Marler, on the line. Well, he says, I have to get off the phone. Peter Davenport's on the line. It's pretty important. It took me a few days afterwards, and after Mark Rodiger called me up, he says, Sam, why aren't we on the O'Hare case? What's going on? I go, what are you talking about? So I came into it, you know, about a week later, and only had the opportunity to interview a few people. One person in particular, I think, was one of the best witnesses, who goes by J.H. And her report is what I have put into the 155-page, it's part of the 155-page report from NARCAP. What happened was Dick Haynes, Dr. Haynes, was the point man on the case, key investigator, and we worked and were assigned specific things to do. There was so much data that came in from that case, but as far as photos go, there were two photos in particular that were going around the internet. One in particular seemed to be a real good rendition of what the people were seeing or had seen. Unfortunately, because there was no author and somebody coming forward giving the details and, you know, letting us examine the actual card, if it was a digital or whatever.
Sam, we have to step away for break again, but we'll pick up there when we come back, and I want to hear about the O'Hare incident. We'll be back, folks.
This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My guest is Sam Maranto. He is the state director for MUFON in the state of Illinois. And Sam, when we went to break, you had just begun getting into describing a photograph of the O'Hare incident.
Yes, the photograph is an obvious object sitting below the cloud cover, and it appeared to be taken from the gate C-17, possibly by one of the pilots, possibly. The problem is, if we don't have the author, if we don't have access to the camera, and somebody stepping forward, we can't consider it evidence. What we can consider it is a good illustration. And this is what people were saying they saw. But nobody ever came forward. And you'd say, now, my gosh, here you have hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, in and about the area. You know, one of the busiest airports in the world, and there's no photographs. There's security footage. There's security cameras all over the place. Where is footage? Well, apparently, that footage disappeared as far as security footage. And apparently, the cameras of the known people who took pictures and admittedly said that they took pictures, they were confiscated. There are some other people who do have photos. And one individual I was hoping to get my chance to see some footage, and this person basically clammed up because they were very scared.
So who went around and collected the cameras?
Not sure. I don't know if they were handed in voluntarily, but all I heard is they were taken or they were given in. They were, as far as the images, the cards or whatever. The other thing is, there were, of the 14 people working for the airlines that did come forward, there were gentle, I don't know if we want to use the term threats, but hinting at the fact that their, you know, that their work records were not perfect, and on and on and on, basically putting them fearful of losing their jobs. And they all clammed up. They never, I was expecting Hilkovich to do something, you know, a second year, you know, a year thereafter, or a follow-up, and nothing. It just, you know, they just clammed up.
One of the things I say very often on this show, Sam, is, you know, my background is as a cop.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I say often is that as a cop, when I was investigating something, the thing that always attracted my attention immediately is what people would not talk about. Or if you were in a situation, you were a witness to a situation, and there is a detail in that situation that you could not have failed to have seen. But when you tell me your story, you leave that detail out. That gets my attention. The truth is always in that silent sound chamber. And so in this situation, where you have the reporter who wrote, and the newspaper admits it, the most popular article ever published on their website. They admit that. They've never had another article have that many hits. And this reporter has nothing more to say about it. The airline personnel that pushed this forward and said, no, wait a minute, we did report this, and the FAA, we did file reports with the FAA, and they're saying that nobody reported it. Those people have gone silent. Well, in that well of silence is the truth. And what this means is that it was not a weather phenomena. It was not a mass hallucination. Once again, whoever is in charge of keeping these secrets has done the exact most stupid thing they could do if they want it to go away. Because when you create that well of silence, you've created a black hole that just sucks in everybody's attention to that event. And when you do that, you may as well just take a highlighter pen, a yellow highlighter pen, and just mark everything that those witnesses said and put it up on a billboard with a big caption that says, pay attention to this, they're telling the truth.
Yes.
And I don't understand these people that want to keep secrets. How can they be so stupid about psychology? I don't understand that. But they do it, and they do it time and time again. So, you know, what I'm left with here is the very distinct impression that the secret keepers view this event as being very real, very tangible, and they don't want us to know about it. But too late, guys, we do know. How big was that object?
Somewhere between 12 to 30 plus feet. And it wasn't, and the other thing is, it may very well have not have been the only object present that day. There were other soundings and paintings of objects to the west that would not, these paintings, these radar paintings, were all symmetrically the same, and the patterns did not seem to fit anything that would have been migratory birds, insects, etc.
Now, when you talk about radar, are you talking about FAA radar?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you've been able to get the radar data was
collected. It was from what I hear, a very expensive FOIA. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where people miss the boat. They always say, "Well, Sam, did you get the radar data for this case, that case?" All this stuff costs money. And luckily, NARCAP was able to muster up the, you know, the funds and get this data. I forget how many different actual radar radars were actually requested, but they got data galore.
Is it true that the FAA has promulgated a new regulation now that FOIA requests for radar data will now cost $35,000?
I haven't heard that, but all I could tell you, it was very expensive. I would say $10,000 for everything they did probably wouldn't have been an exaggeration. I know from my own experience with the Tinley Park case, I didn't get the radar data. You know, the end result is they said that the person who was supposed to have honored my request and executed from Midway Airport was off on a pregnancy leave, you know, maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that in itself is very odd.
So there's no one else taking that person's place while she's gone. Okay.
Exactly. Imagine that.
All right. Okay, look, what I want to do is open up the telephone lines for our audience. We'll continue to talk, but folks, if you have a question or a comment for Sam Maranto, all you need to do is give us a call at our main number, 623-444-5889, or you can call me on the toll-free number if you're not on one of those calling plans where you can call for free. Call me on the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can give me a call on, use Skype, or you may have something else where you can call our main number, which is country code 1-623-444-5889, or you can send me a flash message. What you do is you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Under Sam's photograph on my webpage, you'll see the link for flash messages, and that's for folks outside the USA, outside of Canada. And sometimes I get people saying, well, why is that reserved for them? Why can't I use it? Well, why can't you use the telephone? If you're in Canada or you're in the USA, we have telephone lines, and I even pay for the call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from New York.
Hi, Mark.
How's it going tonight?
Good.
Good. I just had some information that you might want to consider.
Okay.
Basically, it's the technology based around holographic projection, which involves a projection of three-dimensional holographic images, you know, like decoys, UFOs, orbs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even angry gods can be projected above a battlefield. The Army's JFK Special Warfare Center about 20 years ago began developing a PSYOPS hologram system. Basically, the Pentagon had listed holographic projections openly as part of a non-lethal weapons program, and since 1994, program disappeared from view and is now a highly developed black effort technology. The system includes high orbit and earth-based targets by satellite, aircraft-capable systems, and ground-based handheld devices. And some of the chemtrail activity and this is just speculation on my part, may have something to do with the fact that holograms, when they're projected, have no substance that can be detected by radar. If you create an environment where you essentially charge a particle that can be detected by radar, now you can use a holographic projection in three-dimensional space that has substance that can be detected by radar. So now you can project aircraft or UFOs or orbs or gods or whatever it might be, and people who are standing on the ground see these things as real, and radar systems see them as real objects as well. And finally, I think that that a lot of these sightings that people see, these experiences that people have, may have something to do with this. Not entirely. I'm not claiming that this is entirely what we're seeing here. But I really, you know, think that's important. The most important contacts are the ones where you can actually touch a craft, put your hand on it, or touch a being or a visitor or whatever. Those are the substantial ones. The technology that's out there, in my opinion, is just so advanced that that I think that a lot of this stuff is getting, you know, it's just amazing what they're doing.
Well, I appreciate the call, and I think you're right on target with some of that. I think, however, that a great many of these sightings are genuine craft of some kind. But you're exactly right about those holographic images. And as a matter of fact, even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the U.S. military used a rudimentary type of project that they had going where they could make the enemy radar show incoming aircraft. And they just wanted to harass Cuba a little bit and see what would happen. And they projected incoming aircraft, and Cuba actually scrambled fighters and went up to look for these aircraft, which of course then disappeared off of radar. But that was not holographic, it was just radar. Thanks for the call. Did you know about that, Sam?
Yes.
Yeah.
The hologram, people come up with the hologram explanation for things now and then, and of course this technology exists. One thing a hologram does not do is leave physical trace. Let's go to the O'Hare case. The object, which was disc-shaped, more like a football shape, was fatter than a conventional disc,
mm-hmm.
hovered, then at god-awful speed, shot through the ceiling of cloud cover that was there, punching a hole, displacing all that humidity, and doing that within a blink. The physics was calculated out what was needed to displace that, and if anybody's interested, you could get a hold of that 155-page report and see what that is. That cannot be done by a hologram. The case I was talking about with the detaching objects up in Fredericks, Wisconsin, up there, we have physical trace evidence. We have photographic evidence.
What sort of physical trace evidence do you have in that case?
Physical trace evidence is the effect of the area, the house, and what it appears to be implants in the gentleman's eyes and the woman's thigh, and there may be more. So this case is still under investigation, and it's in an area that has a lot of activity. And in fact, I had just gotten a call 2 days ago of more ongoing activity. It's not just them; it's that whole area, and it's been known for UFO activity for hundreds of years. You know, this goes back to Native American lore. So this is not something necessarily our technology, though in some instances our technology and whoever's operating it, our being human technology, advanced technology, may very well be involved in monitoring or whatever its agenda is. We don't know.
The caller from New York mentioned that he thought the most important evidence would be evidence where you can actually touch a craft. Do you have cases reported to you where people have actually been able to touch the craft?
Sure. I mean, you have the Bentwaters case, which is probably the most renowned case of somebody, a colonel, admitting that these actually touched the craft with a witness there. There are cases of, first of all, physical trace evidence, which, of course, is very strong when we put so much on the material aspect, you know, when other sciences don't even have an iota of material, per se, to support their evidence, yet they are held at higher regards and orthodoxy than, say, for instance, just us attempting to make this a scientific venture. So yes, Ted Phillips, he's worked on, what, some 3,000 physical trace cases. There's just quite a few physical trace cases.
All right, we have a flash message from Peter in Columbia. He would like for you to share the details of the strangest case that you have looked into involving alien entities.
Okay, well, I'm going to give a real quick just to understand the ground for alien versus extraterrestrial, and I like the term he used, alien. Alien being something that is not conventional, not to the ken or the intellectual lexicon or social or whatever, something truly unusual. Extraterrestrial is very hard to say. Extraterrestrial is unearthly. We can't say, you know, oh, this is definitely extraterrestrial. We don't have specimens to compare, but to say something's alien, that's a very comfortable term. I think the most unusual case so far was actually two cases, one in your neighborhood just north of you, in 2004, and the Fredericks case. Both cases were going on simultaneously, and one gentleman, in fact, you may know the gentleman, but he likes to stay anonymous, he has a huge scientific background, and was able to describe in detail what was going on. He was able to record scientifically, with instrumentation, some of the unusual events and creatures and beings that were being seen, including creatures that move as if they were in water, appearing to be digitized or translucent, and part of the lore of the area referred to as water people. They were being seen. These things were actually being seen and recorded. I've seen footage. Well, it just so happens some of the odd events that were going on there were also transpiring up in Wisconsin simultaneously. Very unusual phenomena, such as things that looked like tubular things. They were translucent, and they were to describe it, but I couldn't see it. And they had photographs. And I think what had happened is both these individuals had implants in their eyes and were able to see a better spectrum. So I would say the case of what happened in 2004, it's also this year of 13 major hurricanes. And, of course, in December that year is when we had the earthquake and tsunami in Sumatra. So I think 2004 was the year of the weird. We may very well have had a porthole opening of a dimensional tear.
Ooh. We might need to talk about that a little bit. Let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hello. Yeah, I'm really interested in some of the new discoveries within cave life. They found that there's a slime that basically drips sulfuric acid as it's, for its emittance, and it would burn through a human skin. So, you know, it obviously adapted to have something to encompass this, and it actually eats rock, which the other things feed off of, and it does it all without, everything is done without any sunlight. It makes me think that when they've got bacteria also that can withstand radiation, and bacteria seems to mutate a lot faster than physical, bigger beings, it makes me think that some of the rods up in the atmosphere could possibly be life forms that have evolved under different circumstances and might be alive as an animal, able to actually go through space. My thing was, is I do believe in holographic projections.
Bob, hang on. A break just took over, and we'll get back to you as soon as this break is over. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Sam, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. And Bob, are you still with us?
Sure am.
Okay. You were making a point, Bob, that you think these rods that we're all familiar with may actually be able to fly in space.
Well, here's the thing. When you look at the Earth, at one time it was full of methane, very low oxygen, and full of sulfuric acid. But life thrived, and it moved into caves, and it did different things, and it didn't need oxygen. It could. There are things out there that can withstand radiation in this universe, and basically everything that we think we know about life is the biggest scam on the history of the Earth once we're finding out more evidence. I'm curious on two things. The first one was, even though our evidence is matching up totally against evolution, creating who we are, I think it's possible on other planets where they haven't been found, if they're billions of years older or even millions of years older, maybe during a harsh environment, it would cause it to evolve a little bit more. The harsher the environment, the more struggle there is for survival, and you see these octopus forms and things like that. It almost looks like a form of energy, and I'd have to think that the highest form of life that we would know, besides going on to other dimensions, would be a life form that contains consciousness that is pure energy. And I think that the possibilities are limitless, so my question would be, do you think that life could evolve to complex conscious nature that's very intelligent without having genetic engineering and just starting from bacteria such as the mold and slimes, because they have trogdobites like crayfish that, you know, other crayfish could not survive in there because there's like no oxygen. And so it seems as if things adapt to their environment, and you would think that the ultimate adaptation for an animal would be to go into space, and it's very fluid-like. And it makes it look like this planet is just a feeding ground. I mean, if you're a fish in the water and you see a bunch of krill in a big ball, the fish are going to go to the krill.
Yeah, so, let's give him a chance to answer your question, okay? All right, what do you think, Sam?
Oh, real quickly, the answer is yes. Of course, life is not the exception but the rule of the universe. The other thing is to understand that how an intelligence would evolve will be based upon the elements that it's in and the environment it's dealt with. I think intelligence also is universal. The other thing you'd mention is an element of light or an intelligence of light. Just think of the degree of research that's being done with plasma research, and there's actually you can go to some of the conferences and get caught up to date on some of the information that they allow out to the public. So yes, of course, your questions are very good and your insights excellent. And I would agree with you a billion percent. Your next question.
Okay. Well, Bob, listen, thanks for the call, and a very great question, I thought, and good insight. And he always has good questions. All right, 623-444-5889 is the main number. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. And if you're outside the USA or Canada, you can send me a flash message. And we've got a flash message from Paul in Australia. Hello, Kevin. Ezekiel saw this stuff, and God as well. Molten copper, polished brass objects. God was also molten copper, wasn't he? Also, what happens to us when we die? Do we turn into amber orbs? Well, I don't know. What do you think, Sam?
Well, I've seen some disturbing footage and images that I don't even want to even go there, but the orbs may very well be something more transcendental and bizarre, like spirits. Also could be life forms into themselves. They could also be just that dimensional part that radiates in this realm, in this dimension, of something that's much larger, poking in and letting itself be known.
Okay, and also from Australia, this one is from Blue in Australia, and he says, what are your thoughts on the strange weather circle which was caught on satellite over southwestern Australia? Very strange indeed during our above 40 degree period last week. Now, that's centigrade. For those of you using Fahrenheit, that's 105 degrees Fahrenheit. What do you think? I don't know about that. Do you know about that, Sam?
No, I don't. Only thing I could tell you is pay attention to the Earth right now. We're, well, probably in the next 2 days it may quell down a little bit, but expect some more earthquakes, some truly unusual locations. And when it comes to the weather, expect more of these circular unusual things. I think these are streams of bursts of energy that are coming in and out, and pay attention to them. They're going to be more common, I believe.
All right. Now, what do you base that on? Why do you think there are streams? Okay, observation. And where do you think these streams of energy are coming from?
I think it's earth energies. I think these are possibly precursors to some type of seismic activity. And it may not be at that location, but passing through or where multiple energies are hitting. Is it HARP? I don't know, but something's causing in its energy of some sort.
Well, I'll tell you this. There are people who have monitors where they monitor HARP when it's on. They know when it's on, when it's transmitting. Yeah. And, you know, if there's a lot of HARP activity and then you have a big earthquake, or you have HARP activity and then you have a big some kind of superstorm, it's all over the internet. And, you know, people are talking about HARP was on, did HARP cause this? Because we haven't seen that, I don't suspect that HARP was involved, for instance, in Haiti, or in these earthquakes that happened, last week before Haiti. There was a whole bunch of them over the past 2 weeks around the Ring of Fire, the Pacific Rim, including Alaska and California. So, we haven't seen a lot of these postings, you know, about, you know, HARP was on and then this happened. So I don't really suspect that it's HARP. However, I did get an email today informing that there have been clusters of little earthquakes up in Yellowstone. And that's disturbing, especially since I'm sitting out here in the kill zone.
Well, they have been active. There's probably been about 20, 30 or so in the last couple days. But there are going to be other areas that are going to be active real soon. I think we're going to see some activity in the Midwest. Pay attention to an area that isn't very seismically active, that being Niagara Falls area. So just pay attention to those areas. It's very unusual.
You're the third person that has told me within the last week to watch the Midwest, and more specifically, two of them said the, well, they pronounce it the New Madrid, but it's actually Madrid fault line, which is the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
The Mississippi River is the New Madrid fault line, and it's the largest natural fault line in North America. We call it the Mississippi River, but it is a fault line that's full of water. Two have specifically named that, and now you're saying Midwest. Is that what you're referring to?
Midwest and also the Niagara Falls area, which is not a seismically active area. But there have been some unusual activities up there pertaining to possible UFO activity. And I was watching, I'm always on the USGS three, four times a day, seeing if there's patterns. And there are certain patterns that do take place. Regardless what people say, there are patterns. And the one pattern in particular usually indicates some sort of earthquake. This was a couple weeks back, that there would be an earthquake somewhere in the Midwest. But then it went a little further south, and I felt, well, that's going to be northeast New York. Well, where it hit was, of all places, Niagara Falls. And it hit near an area that they have been seeing some unusual lights in the sky, and I was contacted pertaining to those sightings. And I just can't help but feel something is going to happen pretty big, and it isn't going to be that long that we could see that there, that we are at the point that Earth changes are here, and they are going to be dramatic, and they're going to hit areas that we would least expect.
I have a flash message from Australia saying, what are the disturbing stories about the orbs? Please let us know, mate.
The disturbing stories about...
Yeah, you were saying there were some things about those orbs and what you thought they were, and you said, but I don't even want to go there.
You know what it is? When you look at an image and a picture, you could interpret it any which way. Mm-hmm. I've seen some images, in fact, much like the Tesla coil, like you had mentioned, but I've also seen them where there were, looked like beings inside.
Mm-hmm. I've seen those too.
And then I've seen other ones that looked like they were a composite, like if something was collecting them, and what they looked like inside looked more like skulls, as if they were collecting something. If it, you know, this is really out there. If something that comes here actually does collect energy forces, be it souls or whatever, this is so out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing is, I did go to a seminary. I have certain, call it beliefs, that, you know, there is something more to this life, you know, than what...
Well, in your belief system, would you say that what you've seen in these photographs indicates to you that they may be evil or that they may be demonic?
No, I think what they're doing is, from what I see, is they're doing a job. I got past the good and bad some years ago, you know, this whole dichotomy thing.
All right. we have to have a dichotomy here. We have to take a break. And Sam will be back right after this. Folks, don't go away. More with Sam Maranto. And welcome back. We're on Final Approach here, and we're talking with Sam Maranto, who is the state director for MUFON in Illinois. And the home state, it's not where he was born, but it's where he's been living, of the President of the United States. So what do you think, Sam? You think the President ever saw any of these UFOs when he was living in Illinois?
I don't know. Spent a lot of time at the University of Chicago, and I know for a fact there are some people there that have a very high interest in this subject, and who knows who he rubbed elbows with that may have mentioned in his ear somebody other than, of course, John Podesta. But as far as disclosure coming down the pike in his administration, I don't think disclosure will ever come forward in a official sense from any one particular government. This is an observation and a reality that we as individuals have to grasp.
Yeah, I think what happens is they let just enough stuff leak so that you really have the picture, you know what's going on. You don't, maybe you don't know all the fine details, but you've got a grasp of it. And I think they do that on purpose.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Now, you were saying that you have gotten away from, good aliens, bad aliens, evil and righteous and all of that stuff. And I think that's a good thing for us to do. Because, one of the questions that gets asked a lot here is, do you think that the alien agenda is hostile to us, or do you think the alien agenda is beneficent to us? And I've said, and maybe you disagree with this, and if you do, feel free to say so, but I've said, what alien agenda? There are apparently many different types of aliens coming here, and maybe from many different places, each with his own agenda. And I think, if as you say, life is the rule and not the exception, and if intelligence is the rule and not the exception in the universe, they're not that different from us. Their technology may be advanced, but they're not that different from us. Some are not hostile, and some may be. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. Again, it's look at the picture and where do you fit in the picture. The cougar chasing the rabbit, good or bad. Again, I'm going to ask people to do one thing for a day. Try to use words that don't incorporate a dichotomy. No good, no bad, no right, no wrong. Try to find a more descriptive term that is in tune of painting what really is going on, more realistically, okay? I think what happens is, in the scenario of the cougar chasing the rabbit, it's not exactly a good thing for the rabbit unless he's on his last leg and he wants a quick death. But it's good for the cougar. And it might be even more so beneficial to a lot of things, such as scavengers, the babies, the cubs in the den. It's where are we in the picture? And like you said, every single thing that could think can incorporate in its own mind a agenda. And that agenda can change with the wind. We don't know. Because first of all, the biggest problem we have with this whole scenario is three things. We don't know who we are, what we are or why we are. And I would say that that is the center of the enigma and the problem of anything resembling disclosure.
I think those are excellent points. We don't know who we are, why we are, or what we are.
Yes.
And I think that's right. All that you need to do to determine that that's the truth is take a look at the transhumanist movement. And people say, well, that takes us away from what it means to be human. Well, then ask, okay, what does it mean to be human? And it's hard to define.
You hit something that I'm actually setting up a separate site for, and it's sapiensrising.com. And that is going to be a site to explore what is it exactly that defines us or refines us as human, and then transcend from that. What should we be looking at? What should we be doing? In this economic strife that we're going through, everything is a matter of, should we go back to a gold standard? The bottom line is, what is a currency and what is a commodity? And it really boils down to us, our ability to work together, to advance collectively as a society, if we're going to do that, and to have hopes and dreams, and not just hopes and dreams for ourselves, but for each other. And it's not a socialistic thing, but it's a social ideal that should be that got us out of the cave, and it's the only way we're going to move forward into anything resembling the next century.
One of the things I think it means to be human, what is it that makes us human, is it's primitive emotions refined by philosophy.
Yes.
Now, some people would disagree with that, but we have very primitive emotions and urges, but we refine those by philosophy. You have an urge to just to kill somebody because they made you so angry. So why don't you do it? Well, because we've refined that with the philosophies that have been agreed upon by our society. And so I think that's a big part of what it means to be human. One of the great problems that we are having in the breakdown of society is that we have for decades failed to teach philosophy. Now, religion falls into that same category. Religion is a philosophy. It is, each religion has a philosophy that it presents. And people are not studying religion, they're not studying philosophy, they're not examining one philosophy against another, and we're watching the breakup of society all over the Western world.
Yes. We're becoming very mechanical and far less spiritual, and we are a spiritual being. In fact, that is the major component. This is where I have issues with atheism per se. Okay, I don't abide by any particular religious code. I'm spiritual. I know I am of a spirit, and I am certain that there are far more intelligent beings and spirits that do have some influence on my life, and that this wonderful, magnificent world that we live in didn't happen by happenstance. And I am certain of this. It's not a matter of belief. I'm certain of it because I have the ability to rationalize this and to explore and to observe.
Sam, we only have about 20 seconds here.
Well, thank you very much for a great time. And if anybody would like to get a hold of me, MUFONSAM@comcast.net, MUFONSAM@comcast.net, and I will return your email.
Outstanding. Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Well, there you have it, folks. That's a wrap. I hope you've enjoyed this evening. I certainly have. It's always interesting when we talk with Sam Maranto. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.